Until 11, local, national and international affairs. Plus some goss and scandal. You're listening to Mitchell's Front Page on 94.7 The Pulse.
And with me in the studio now is Davina Montgomery, the editor of Geelong Business News. How are you, Davina?
I'm really well. Mitch, how are you?
Very good. And I've said that this is the biggest week for the show so far because it's been a packed morning so far. And, of course, to have Andy Medic and Bev MacArthur on the same day is very exciting for us.
That is exciting. Wow,
you are. If anyone listened to the Western Victoria Forum.
No one can say that you aren't bringing all the voices in here, Mitch, are you?
Which is good. I think that's important. We've got Libby Coker coming on tomorrow. She will have been on 3 out of the last 4 weeks on this show, which is quite significant. But I think it's good that people actually know who's representing them and can listen to that, because we talked, last year about that survey where people didn't know who their MP was. So at least if they listen to this, they'll actually hear from the people that are supposedly speaking for them in Parliament.
Yeah, absolutely, Mitch. And the more that we have these sort of, you know, I don't want to say informal because I understand it's, you know, it's election time and people are campaigning, but it's so important that we get, you know, those voices and we get those longer conversations where you can actually dig deep. But otherwise, it's such a difference to just having slogan talk.
And I thought Simon raised a few good points there during his spot, ranging from bike paths to the city deal.
And to the swimming pools, yeah. I was listening to all of them with a lot of interest. Look, I couldn't agree more with Simon on the bike paths. And I'm not a cyclist. I'm a driver, mainly because I'm not very fit and I'm not that great on a bike. But I do, you know, I will pop out and ride with on the, you know, ride around with the kids. And when I was growing up, we lived on our bikes all the time, but there was no traffic and it was, you know, and it was safe to do that. And now it's just not that safe anymore. And you do, I drive around a lot and you're sitting there looking at going, why is there a bike path connected to this road? It's covered in all the rubble from the road. It's getting, you know, the stones flicked up from all the driving when it just could have been on the other side of the barrier. Why wouldn't you put it on the other side of the barrier so that riders can be safe? And it just feels like such a common sense thing, but it just doesn't seem to have filtered through. So great to hear Simon bringing that up, and hopefully, you know, we do get a bit of common sense in how we plan our roads and upgrade our roads.
And we'll be speaking to Councillor Trent Sullivan on the show tomorrow, and I think he'll have a bit to say as well about what's going on with the bike paths through the city, because they're talking about how the TAC has said you have to follow this route, but then the councillors are saying, well, we don't think this is the right route, so what do we do, because we don't necessarily want to lose that funding.
Yeah, look, it's a tough one when the bureaucrats get involved, isn't it? I'd be much more interested in hearing what people who ride through the city more regularly, what do they want? And I think if everyone was listening to them rather than listening to the bureaucrats, then we might get a solution that actually works.
Well, as we were saying during the break, there's also factions within the cycling groups.
Oh, there is, of course.
The so-called Lycra Brigade, you've got the commuters, you've got just the people that are out with their kids on a Sunday. You almost need, you know, the bit like when you're going swimming, the fast lane, the slow lane and the medium lane.
Well, wouldn't it be great if we actually got to the point where that was really needed though, Mitch, where there's so many people on bikes that we do need a separation? And yeah, I think given the fact that there's, you know, there's some pretty keen cyclists down here that take their cycling really seriously, I wouldn't want to be toddling along with my kids in the way of some guy that's flying along doing 70 k's an hour on his U-Bute carbon fibre bike.
One of the councillors was talking to me about this survey that they've done of the community, the free parking one, which has generated a lot of interest. But one of the things that they've learnt, or at least that's coming through in the early stages, is that people don't like to walk in Geelong. They don't like having to park 400 metres away from where they're going.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? I was thinking about this as well, because I work in the centre of Geelong, so you know, sort of walking around, I walk around the city a lot, and it's one of those things that if I don't have to carry my, you know, I work from home a lot of the time as well, so I've got a really heavy work bag, taking that in and out all the time, that can be a bit of an issue. So if I have to drop my bag off, I do want to be able to park as close as I can to work so that I can get that in there. But then when I'm not carrying my bag, I want to be able to walk, and I'm really happy to walk, you know, quite a long way. And it's actually a really nice thing walking through our city, but there are those practicalities of, you know, what if you do have sort of mobility issues? What if you are carrying something heavy? If you're going shopping, for instance, in the city and you're carrying a whole lot of stuff, you don't really want to have to lug those heavy bags around. You know, maybe we, but it is going to be a reality that the days are gone when you can just expect to drive into the city and park. And I can, you know, I feel everyone's frustrations. I'm one of those people that has to come in and park around town too. And that's, you know, if you have to park a few hundred, you know, 500 metres away, that's not really a big ask. You know, if you go up to, you know, you want to go up and work around somewhere around Carlton, then you're going to be parked a couple of k's away, and you just do, and you will walk. So it's that mother of necessity thing. It's the way that it is going that way. We're not going to cut down on the amount of people that are in town. We're not going to cut down on the needs of people to get in. So the options are you drive in and get a park where you can and walk, and really, the best option is to start getting some more options of how we can get people in where they don't need to bring their car in. And wouldn't that be nice?
That said, the split in the council when it comes to putting in this infrastructure like the bike paths seems to be between build it and they will come versus, well, if we build these bike paths and not a lot of people are using them, then it becomes a bit of a white elephant.
Well, that's it. But, you know, that's kind of a fair few of an argument as well, which, because it's all very well to say, look, we've built these bike paths and people aren't using them. Well, if it's a bike path between the centre of Geelong up to, say, High Street in Belmont, but what about the extra connections?
Yeah.
Where else are people aren't coming from. They're not just stopping in that spot. You've still got to be able to get from home to somewhere.
Yep.
So it's just not a logical argument and just doesn't stack up. It's a system. It has to be built as a system and it has to work as a system.
Now, we've had some really good discussions on this show in the last few weeks about what's going on with the Mall, and today that's sort of been reignited a bit because Food Truck Fridays has either been cancelled or just wasn't getting the patronage that they hoped. It was a bit of a novelty when it first came in back in 2014, and they had some very impressive numbers there, but it seems like it's just dropped right off since that time. Now, people are being quoted in the paper today, including Darren Lyons, who apparently set up that initiative, being quoted as saying that people just don't like going to the Mall, and this shows it.
Is it? I don't know. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's in the wrong spot. Maybe the food truck should be down on the waterfront where people are going for a walk at lunchtime. Again, it's, you know, you can all get there and you can all sit there and argue about it, but really, at the end of the day, people will choose what they choose, so why not go where they're going? And I understand that it was put in place to try and sort of encourage a different culture in the Mall, and that's a really good thing. But it doesn't feel like the right idea either. I mean, it's lunchtime. Do you walk in towards the city at lunchtime? I don't. I always walk out of the city if I can. I walk down to the waterfront or down to the gardens, or I'm looking to get out of the centre of the city at lunchtime. And it, you know, the numbers around those places tell me that that's probably a pretty shared sort of feelings.
Don't they say increasingly that a lot of professionals just have lunch at their desks now?
A lot of people. I think a lot of people do, but there are a lot of people. If you go down anywhere around the waterfront and even into the gardens at lunchtime, you'll see a lot of people. And, you know, people understand now your day is better when you're working. If you can get out and you can have a walk, get some fresh air, if you can get anywhere near something natural, so near the water, under some trees, those things are great for us. And it's not just physically, it's mentally, it's, you know, gives you a bit of a boost for the afternoon and gets you through the day and you just feel better. It's a nice thing. But, you know, my choice wouldn't be to walk along a whole lot of concrete streets and stopping at the crossings and trying to get into the Mall to get food and then go back out again. It's just, that's not a great experience. So why would you go flocking in there? I get the novelty thing was great. We certainly need to do something with the Mall, but I just don't think that was it.
We've tried so many ideas, though. I mean, it's been a problem for some time, the culture of the Mall. A lot of people concede that.
It used to work when there was a little, you know, remember they had that sort of rotunda in the middle and they had...
I was saying 2 weeks ago, I remember when it was a fountain and there was kids' play equipment there. That was when I was growing up back
in
the 90s.
Yeah, there was. And there was a spot in the middle where they had community workers who would speak to street kids and people who were homeless. And there were also a pretty fast rotation of police in there as well. So there were always a couple of uniforms that were wandering around. But it wasn't in a I'm going to arrest you way. It was very much in a, you know, the police that were stationed in there got to know all the people that were walking through the Mall. They got to know certainly people who were spending a lot of time in the Mall. So kids,
community policing.
Yeah, absolutely. But not just policing. So there was also, there was a couple. My grandfather, for instance, was one of these guys. So for years and years and years after he retired, he spent his years looking after kids, looking after teenagers who didn't really have a lot of other people to speak to. He would go and man that booth in there most days. So I could find him in there most days. Kids who didn't have anything to eat, he'd make sure that they could find somewhere to eat, find something to eat or get them something to eat. If they didn't have anywhere to sleep, he'd sort out somewhere safe for them to go. So it wasn't just about having community policing in there. It was about having people who cared about people in the centre of the city. And I think maybe that's a nice way to approach this, because when you get... You know, when we treat it like everything's a crime or everything's an issue that has to be solved, well, these issues are not going to be solved so easily, but how about we just go back to treating people as people and seeing what we can do to make it a bit better?
Now, Parliament's back today federally, and I was talking to a federal government staffer. Apparently, the mood in Canberra is a little bit dim at the moment. He or she didn't really want to be there.
It wouldn't be a very upbeat place at the moment, I wouldn't imagine, Mitch, on all sides. I mean, it was fascinating to read Christopher Pyne's comments that came out about the state of politics in our country, it was actually really nice to hear because it felt pretty reasonable. It felt pretty genuine. And I think he's right. But when we've got one of the country's most senior cabinet ministers coming up and saying that, you know, politics is self-obsessed and panic prone, there's this panic prone spiral that's happening in Parliament, that reads pretty true. And it's a pretty damning indictment of where things have got to.
And Christopher Pyne's not self-obsessed at all.
Nope, Christopher Pyne never talks about himself.
I thought it was when I read that. I thought, okay, coming from him.
Yeah. Well, I think it's true of the environment, though. I think it is a self-obsessed environment, and it is very much that spiral is very much evident. I mean, we see that as soon as there's an issue that comes up, it spirals very quickly, and then there's this knee-jerk reaction against it, and there is no sense of people having time to just get through and really understand an issue and make good decisions that are thinking about the long term. We've lost that, and until we can get that back, I can't see anything changing.
Will you ever get rid of the sort of self-obsessed nature of politics, though? Because to run for Parliament in the first place, I would imagine you'd have to have at least some sort of ego.
Yeah, well, you would, absolutely. But at the same time, it's there as a position to hold power on behalf of other people. And I think, you know, there is a sense of responsibility in a lot of people that stand up and do put their hand up for Parliament, because we do need people who are willing to do that. We need people who are willing to take that lead. And it's a really tough gig. You know, I've got a lot of admiration for people who do put themselves in that environment. But the problem is that the environment is toxic. Mm. I don't think it's the people that are going in there necessarily. I'm sure there are plenty. In fact, I know there are plenty. But I think there are plenty more who do go in it with pretty good intentions of doing the right thing and being able to represent people and try and make a difference and try and make the world better. Because if you think about where do people come from, I mean, they've either come from, you know, they might have come from the union background, and all of these things have their issues. But a lot of people have come through from local committees. They're the people that, if you needed people on the parent teaching or the school council, they would be the ones who would sit there, the kindergarten committees, the local sporting clubs. These are sort of the breeding grounds of people who eventually go into politics. The problem is that it's become a really small pool now, and we've ended up with career politicians and people who are legacy, so people whose families have been in there. You're finding a lot of these people have all gone to school together. Mm. Of course, there's going to be issues. If you're going to pick up a whole lot of people who've all been at high school, you know, or in the same high schools, you know, high schools aren't exactly very well-run little democracies out in the playground either. So that's what we're seeing. We're seeing that kind of environment picked up and put into Canberra, and therein lies the issue, I think. We just don't have enough diversity, and it's really showing.
Now, I've been invited to sit in the audience of Q&A tonight, and Sarah Henderson's going to be on the panel.
Fantastic. You got your questions ready?
I have. I've put in a block. Good. Who knows if they'll be successful in getting up, but there's a few things that I would like to see answered. In terms of where they're trying to push the program tonight, One of the points is, of course, going to be the Banking Royal Commission and the fallout from that, because Mark Dreyfus is there. He's saying that Parliament needs to sit for longer. There's really only a handful of parliamentary sitting days between now and the actual election. Mark Dreyfus says they need more time. But I don't even know if they gave them more weeks, if that would be enough to put together a sensible proposal going forward. And, of course, we haven't really spoken since the Banking Royal Commission thing dropped. Did you have any thoughts on that?
Oh, look, heaps of thoughts on that, Mitch. How to put them
where
into a small amount?
I mean,
where do you start?
76 recommendations.
Heaps of recommendations. Look, lots of really sensible things in there, and it has become, I think, the overwhelming outcome out of the Banking Royal Commission is, again, we talked about toxic environments. Wow. Banks have become really toxic. And what I was really interested in hearing about through this Royal Commission was people who've worked in the banking sector and have worked in there for a long time. So people who've been bank managers or tellers or have worked in the executive part of banks spoke of having great careers and feeling really valued and doing a good job and being there to sort of help customers. And remember, it wasn't that long ago that our banks were not only very strong and profitable, but there weren't a whole lot of these issues. And we know that because the people that were working in there are telling us that. They're telling us that it hasn't been that long since we've had that. It really felt like after the GFC, when the banks came through, there was all of this global spotlight on the banks. All of a sudden, there was a whole lot of investor money that came swooping in and wanted to invest in Australian banks because they were the guys that survived that GFC in fairly good shape. Backed up, of course, by the moves of our parliament, which was, of course, funded by the taxpayers of Australia. So we did that collectively. When that happened, I think the aftermath of that has been this just breakout of ego and crazy greed that has got us to this situation. So it doesn't feel like it should be that much of a jump to go, well, this hasn't been going on for that long. It's become entrenched over a reasonably short period of time. How far back do we need to go to be able to strip out all of that damage and just go back to what banking should have been? Because people who had loved their careers in banking had felt really valued, had felt that they were really delivering a great service to the community and really loving what they did for a job, then spoke about it turning into just a horror show. You know, the dread of turning up there, of feeling ashamed and embarrassed of what they were doing and appalled by what they were being asked to do.
Stephen Mayne, who is going to be on the panel tonight, has said that we need to have a banking royal commission every 7 years. That, for me, says that there's a failure. If we have to govern and enforce and do all the jobs of those bodies through a royal commission, which is very expensive.
It is
very expensive. Very time-consuming. That clearly says there's something broken.
Well, I think it speaks to the importance of our banking system. It is fundamental. Well, you know, it's our line of credit.
Yeah.
It's what keeps the money moving around our economy. So we have to have a strong banking system.
And we all
has
own
to
the banks
work.
Through our shares.
Absolutely.
As well.
Absolutely. So I don't think that there's anything wrong with tightening up on how we keep an eye on this. I think the question is how, though. And I don't necessarily agree with, I don't think I do agree with the Royal Commission. I mean, that feels like a huge process to go through. But how do we find that out? Well, you know, we certainly, for a start, we need whistleblower protections. We need to have a system where people who are in the system can be reporting to someone externally, because there's no point in someone in the system having to complain to someone in the system. Nothing changes.
Yeah.
If you go and speak to people in the branches, if you go and speak to the people who are, you know, in that sort of middle, lower executive area, all of them will know what these issues are, and they will have known it for years. So how do we get access to those people and the customers to have somewhere where they can be raising any issues that come about, so that then they can be addressed, so we don't have to have a royal commission every 7 years?
Well, that's the gist of one of the questions I put in for tonight is, why do we need to have this sort of governing by royal commission? Because I just don't like this culture that we have of having royal commissions into everything we don't like.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, one of the problems with a royal commission, and let's be frank, they've done some extraordinary things with royal commissions in the past few years, that, you know, there's been some lids lifted off some very dirty buckets that we've absolutely needed to shine a light on. But that being said, the natural response after a royal commission is these, you know, huge amount of recommendations, and then we're putting layers and layers and layers of regulation on top of systems, so that we're again ending up with these systems that are so heavy in their operations, so heavy in the layers of complexity in them, that we're taking more and more attention away from what they're fundamentally there to do. Banks are fundamentally there to provide line of credit and savings mechanisms for the people and the businesses of countries. That's what they're there to do. You know, our aged care system is there to look after and care for people as they age in Australia, and that's what we want their absolute focus to do, and it's the same for all of these systems.
Well, thank you very much for coming in. It's been a great discussion, and I appreciate you coming in as well at the last minute off schedule. And let's catch up soon.
It's been great to see you, Mitch.
Thank you very much.
Good luck tonight.
Montgomery. Thank you very much, Davina Montgomery there, editor of Geelong Business News.
Mitchell's Front Page with Mitchell Dye, Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11 on 94.7 The Pulse.